as many of your Indonesian listeners know, I was in the Southeast Asian tour of the musical Grease. We were in Jakarta, Singapore, Hong Kong, and we were canceled in Kuala Lumpur.
How well did Grease translate in those markets?
Well, one of the problems, I think, is that Indonesia, being the world's largest Muslim country, did not look kindly on the idea that Rizzo, Stockard Channing in the movie, had a pregnancy scare. So we kind of had to write that out of it. So basically, Rizzo was just being a bitch for no reason. But the songs played well. So you'd have, you know, vast hordes of Indonesians bopping their heads along to the soundtrack. The book scenes had been sort of cannibalized, and a lot of the audience, frankly, didn't even speak English, so I don't think they were interested in it. I think we should have really just done a concert version.
Well, did they give them any sort of translation? I remember going to the Passion Play in Oberammergau, Germany, a number of years ago, and listening to like 7 hours, I think, of German Passion Play with a little translator book. They didn't give your audiences in Asia anything like that?
In 7 hours of that guttural language, that is passionate, wow, or impassioned. No, I don't think they did. I think what they did is they put up posters around Jakarta of John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John. So I think, in fact, everyone was vastly disappointed when they showed up and they found non-union actors that were in their early 20s.
You were in the Broadway production of 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Yeah.
Theater can be pretty grueling work, 8 shows a week, week after week after week. I guess you moved into political satire because it's so much less challenging?
You know, honestly, and by the way, whenever people say honestly, they're about to lie, so I try not to say that. So I'm redacting honestly from my last sentence. I was a news junkie growing up. I grew up in Washington, D.C., that may be part of it, where politics are just sort of in the air, just as I imagine if you grow up in L.A., whether or not you're inclined to be interested in entertainment, it's sort of unavoidable, the business of entertainment. So I was always interested in politics, you know, and current events, but I also was, you know, an aspiring actor and performer. And so political satire seemed like the right marriage, the right merger. And I was lucky to sort of be coming into my professional maturity or whatever it is when things like The Daily Show and really a whole industry of political satire was being reborn. I mean, obviously, you know, it existed for a long time. There was Jonathan Swift, but also, you know, the Smothers Brothers and all of that. But this sort of new age of it was just beginning. It was a nice timing thing.
You were a convention floor correspondent for both of the major political conventions for Larry King in 2004.
I absolutely love that. And he's just great. He's a good man. And it was a fun show to do. He never let his ego sort of, you know, quash the listeners and what the audience maybe wanted to hear at home. And I think he got a lot of guff for that, people thinking that he was just a lazy interviewer. But I think it wasn't that. It was just that as an interviewer, he resisted the temptation to always prove to everyone out there how smart he is and how much he knows. But it was a blast. And also, I'm kind of an old soul. So during commercial breaks, I loved singing Johnny Mercer songs with Larry. So it was very, very fun.
You're now doing some regular news reporting for various CBS programs. How have you managed to make that transition from someone poking fun at politicians and cultural figures to someone now perhaps covering them?
It's a great question, and I wish I had some fascinating kind of breakthrough answer for it. I really don't. I think that what happened was, in this business, you go from job to job, and especially in media and entertainment, you have to juggle a lot of opportunities because they can be very fleeting, and you have to keep a lot of irons in the fire. And Sunday morning, CBS Sunday Morning, which is a great show, was one of the things I was doing, and I just really connected with it. I love the fact that it's kind of, if you work there, maybe even if you watch it, it's kind of like grad school. There's just all these different sort of projects going along. Some of them, you know, you're working on for a long time. You don't have a gun to your head to get your piece about Monet on the air this week because it's not as if Monet is in the news right now. So it gets on the air when it's good and ready and worth the audience seeing. So I just really loved it because it can take different topics, just a crazy wide range, and really dig deep. I'm doing a piece right now. I just did an interview with Michelle Williams, who was terrific about her performance as Marilyn Monroe, but I'm also doing a piece on the new wave of out-of-control college football uniforms, you know, and then I'm also doing a piece on why redistricting and gerrymandering is just a terrible cancer on the body politic. So, you know, when I was growing up, I always liked the variety pack of cereals. I never went for the big box. And I think there's, you know, there's a downside to that maybe, but the upside is that I really like it. So
there have been a few journalism scandals in recent years that revolve around reporters expressing personal opinions. Thinking, of course, of the Juan Williams incident and more recently the firing of well-known public radio host Lisa Simeone after she appeared in an Occupy Movement video. Do you ever worry that you might wade into some tricky ethical waters, mixing the comedy, the satire, the straight news reporting, all these sort of different veins of your professional life?
Yes, and it's very interesting that you ask this, because this has only come up very, very recently. Somebody said to me, somebody that I trust and whose opinion I respect, said, be careful with your Twitter feed. And I said, look, you know, part of my role at CBS News, and we'll see, my bosses may disagree with that, is for me to bring my voice. Sunday Morning is not a political show. So, I mean, you know, if I'm doing a piece on the play Our Town or on the increasing number of men who dye their hair or whatever it may be, you know, it's obviously not a problem there. But I don't know what my capacity is as a CBS News correspondent, what direction it will take me in. If I start doing things like covering the debates, I think it would be very odd for me to suddenly, and this is a very pretentious word, but to deracinate, to be shorn of all sort of personality and point of view. It just wouldn't make sense. And also, I'd feel kind of, I wouldn't be comfortable doing it, and it would just look weird. So I don't know the answer, but I also think it brings up a larger question, which is, you know, is there such a thing as a neutral journalist? Maybe it's more respectful and realistic and better for an audience that people, in a way, show their cards. And I don't know what that means exactly, but the idea that anybody could be just a complete blank slate just giving you the facts is, I think, is specious. It's not realistic.
Certainly an issue that folks in our business have been debating a lot lately. On a lighter note, food. What's up with the food? You host a show on the Cooking Channel. You were a regular judge on Food Network's Iron Chef. Tell me about your culinary chops.
Well, I don't know anything about cooking. I don't cook at all. I don't even have salt in my apartment, which sounds like some weird kind of like religious thing or something. No, somebody was in my apartment. They said, hey, I need some salt. And I went, oh, how about this? And they said, that's sugar. I don't know anything about cooking.
Okay, so how do you end up on cooking shows?
Well, here's the thing. It's not quite as scandalous as it sounds, because Cooking Channel, which asked me to host a show, it's a spinoff network of Food Network, asked me to host a beautifully produced show called Foodography. They and I both agreed that I would not be put in a position where it was implied that I am a great cook, because that would just be wrong. I mean, there's no lack of great cooks out there, chefs that could host a show. So that show is more me telling you about the history and backgrounds of particular foods and really just sort of introducing the segments. However, I am doing a special, which will hopefully be a series, where I do learn to cook from grandmothers and grandfathers across the country, which is something that I've been developing for a while, and I'm quite excited. We just finished the first episode, and that's going to air in January sometime.
How did it go?
It went great. We're starting off with two different grandparents in an hour-long special. Found an amazing Italian grandfather and a Filipina grandmother. And they both were just terrific. And I went to each of their homes and learned a family recipe from them, and it culminated in a family meal.
So, in other words, you're not cooking the turkey tomorrow?
Absolutely not. In fact, I'm going with my mother and my brother to a restaurant.
So is it genetic? Your mother doesn't cook either, or your brother
doesn't
cook?
You know, my mother's Colombian, so she kind of gets a pass because they don't celebrate Thanksgiving. I mean, mind you, she's lived in this country for over 50 years, but she'll always play the Colombia card when it comes to Thanksgiving. Like, we don't have Thanksgiving in Bogota.
Could she whip up a feijoada or something? I don't know. What's a good Colombian?
I should know, but I don't cook.
Okay, we'll let you off the hook on that. So I know I've sort of exhausted my time with you. I've got one more question for you, if that's
sure.
Okay. So I have to say it, given the resume, you seem like someone who's famous for holding lots of random jobs on television. Is that what you imagined? Is that what the 10-year-old Mo Rocca imagined he'd be doing?
I think the 10-year-old me wanted to be on Broadway, which I have done and I'd love to do more of, you know, and I'm sort of, but that's not the direction my career took. And also, frankly, the economics of Broadway are so different now that you have to be like a big, big star to get on Broadway. So strangely enough, I could get back to Broadway if I had my own sitcom probably quicker than if I pursued theater full bore. But that's what I wanted at 10 years old. But things, you know, people change. I mean, let's just say I'm still figuring it out.
I think Megan Fox is on Broadway now, right? Isn't that a little...
Is that true?
I read that. I did read that somewhere this past week. It was probably on Gawker or something like that. It kind of made me cringe.
Maybe, well, but you know, I got to say, she'll sell tickets. So
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's hard enough to make money on Broadway, so... But I also get the cringe.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
All right, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, you too.